Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Pain in the Arsenal. Josh, I'm afraid, is still here, but Henry will not be here with us this week. He's still snowed under with work and stuff, which is a bit of a shame, but there you go. Life sometimes gets in the way. And I guess what else is a shame is Arsenal's result and performance on Sunday, against Southampton. Josh, other than the football, did you have a nice weekend?
Yeah, anytime we get a result like that, I tend to lose everything else I did in the results. So I couldn't tell you exactly what I did this weekend because I don't remember. I just remember that we couldn't beat Southampton. But yes, how was your weekend?
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough problem. I was also a little bit disappointed. It snowed everywhere in the UK.
It did here too.
Yeah, apart from Manchester, because Manchester had this amazing ability to not snow. so it was a little bit disappointing. I was hoping for more. So let's dig into the game. It was an early start for you, is that right? What time did it kick off in the States?
Well, I had the misfortune of thinking that it kicked off at 7:30, when in fact it kicked off at 7, so I woke up with a text message from my dad that just said, Jesus, per Mertesacker. And I thought he was just complaining that he was in the starting lineup, and I was like, oh, he'll be fine, you know, he's composed. And then he goes, no, the game's on, he already gave up a goal. And I was like, it was like 7:04, I was like, there's no way he's already given up a goal, but he did.
Yeah, it's not even kicked off yet.
No, exactly.
How is he that bad? Well, I guess that bad he was.
Yes.
Were you expectant of the victory before kickoff? And I guess the same question applies to kind of at half time when Arsenal were 1-0 down. Do you still expect a win?
Yeah, as you know, I always expect a win. I always expect very lopsided wins, in fact.
Yes.
Prior to the game, I think I got a little out of hand talking about how we don't even really need Mesut Ozil and how we were going to win 4-0, and it all looks really stupid now. But I did, even at halftime, think that we were going to find a way to win 2-3, maybe even 4-1, because, I mean, after Southampton scored that goal, they went into a shell. And that's fine when you're in, like, the 80th minute, but they did it, like, right in the... And before even halftime, they just sat back, and I thought there's no way we can't get through this, and we couldn't until the 87th minute. We could not break that down. I'm disappointed in the draw. It feels like such a wasted opportunity with so many other drop points around us.
Yeah, it was especially after Saturday's results. You know, Chelsea losing was huge. You obviously knew one of the Manchester teams were going to drop points. Liverpool obviously had a chance of dropping points, and they did draw in with Everton. So that was a real chance for Arsenal to make up some ground on the Manchester clubs and separate themselves from Chelsea and from Liverpool. And, well, they didn't. And I was saying on the last podcast how in their next six games, the five of those teams are in the bottom half. And really, they should have been looking to win at least four or five of those five games. Well, this was the first one, and they failed to win. In typical Arsenal fashion, they failed to do what they should do. Let's dig a little bit deeper. I guess the most concerning and most prominent topic to discuss was the defensive issues. Again, individual mistakes led either to goals or to probably what should have been goals had Southampton been a little bit more clinical. And I remember after the Huddersfield game, we said that against a better team, these mistakes will be capitalised upon. And Huddersfield did have openings in that game, but they lacked the quality in the final third. Well, Arsenal have now played two games since then. They've played United and Southampton, two teams that have the quality to take advantage of those mistakes, and they both did. Do you think this is something that is rectifiable moving forward, or are you worried that it could run and run throughout the year?
Maybe I'm just naive, but I really don't see how this is a problem that's going to be ongoing. With, I mean, these are people, these defenders we have that have never, I mean, everybody has these problems. They all make mistakes, but I don't remember ever seeing these defenders making so many mistakes time after time. And I mean, it's not like, we always talk about the difference between individual mistakes and systematic mistakes. It's not like the formation they're in is letting them down. They're just screwing up personally. And then because I don't know what else to attribute it to, I'm just going to attribute it to bad luck that we've had 3 games now in a row where we've had just been, I mean, 2 that we've been bitten by mistakes, but 3 where we've made some crucial mistakes. And there doesn't seem to be any reason why it keeps happening other than just general sloppiness. And I don't know how you fix that whenever the people that are sloppy are the people that are supposed to, their main job is to not be sloppy. And
yeah, I mean, Per Mertesacker especially is an experienced, accomplished defender. There's very little that he hasn't seen, and all right, he has significant shortcomings in kind of athletic areas and stuff like that. But really, this isn't a player who should be making simple mistakes like passing straight to Charlie Austin in the 3rd minute or whenever it was, and then diving in on Dusan Tadic and getting rolled incredibly easily and falling over like a giraffe. Like, he is an experienced defender. He should know better. And they feel like they're mental errors rather than, you know, like there was a moment when later in the game when Bellerin and Cajoni tried to play like a 1-2 deep in their own half in the right channel, and Cajoni made a dart forward and Bellerin didn't see it and he passed it straight behind him, straight to a Southampton player, and it led to Charlie Austin, I think he was judged to be offside, but he ended up getting a shot on goal. And that's just a mental error. It's just a mistake from 2 players who have played for many, many years in the Premier League. Obviously, Bellerin's only 22, but it's not like he's not played a lot of games in the last few years. He knows the character and the difficulty of teams in Premier League that they play in the Premier League. And these were stupid mistakes. And they are costing Arsenal points. They've cost Arsenal 4 points in the last 2 games alone. And obviously the second half against Huddersfield was much better. But in the first half, Huddersfield could have scored at least 1. I know Petr Cech after the game said, you know, we could have been 3-0 down after 10 minutes. And he was right, to be honest. Southampton were probably a little bit unlucky to only be 1 goal down. One player I know you wanted to bring up especially is Lauren Koscielny. Have you been concerned by his, I guess I'll describe it as aging form this year?
Yeah, we talk about him all the time about how we've had a rough couple, I mean not a rough couple years at Arsenal, but we've had years where there aren't a lot of guys you can rely on. And the one person we've always been able to rely on is Lauren Koscielny. I mean, like I said, everybody makes their mistakes. He'd make 2 to 3 a year. I don't ever remember him being this bad, even whenever he first arrived. And I think that just has to come down to his Achilles. And that being the case, if we keep sending out this guy who's got a bum Achilles, who's our best defender when healthy, then what does that say about why, first off, why we sold Gabriel Paulista? Because I always saw him as a cookie-cutter replacement for Koscielny. He just needed time. But you sell him, so you have to send Koscielny out there, despite the poor form or injury, whichever one's plaguing him more. It doesn't make sense to me why we keep running with him. And I kind of see it the same as Alexis. I hate to throw Koscielny in with Alexis, who I am losing a lot of respect for. But, I mean, I feel like their name value is carrying them into the starting 11 more than their current form, which is not a recipe for success. I don't need to say that. But I mean, just because these are guys that in the past have carried us, that have done so much, doesn't mean that they merit a start every single time out whenever they're hurting the team.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And certainly Koscielny he's looked old. He looked old against United, and he looked old again against Southampton. And I come back to the Huddersfield game where he I don't think he should have played. I think it should have been even obviously Mustafi was fit then, so he could have been Mertesacker or could have been Holding or Chambers, and you carefully manage the number of games that Koscielny has to play this year so that you keep him fit for when it really matters in February, March and April time. Because at the moment, I can't see him being remotely match fit when that time rolls around. And it's not a specific injury, but just the niggling difficulty that he is having with that Achilles. He looks slow.
Yeah.
He looks slower than he used to. And that was one of his main strengths. One of his real foundations of his game was his athleticism and his ability to track runs into the channel and recover his position.
And I'm sick of seeing our defenders get rolled. Like, we see Mertesacker get rolled, we saw Koscielny get rolled. I think back to even Coughlin when he got rolled by Eden Hazard. Like, those are embarrassing moments, and I don't remember them ever happening this much before. I mean, these are guys that, like I said, are trained not to do that, and it just keeps happening.
Yeah, there is an aggressive edge to them in how they try and win the ball or nick the ball in front of the striker, and it doesn't work very often. Or at least it isn't at the moment. And especially early in games, that's a stupid thing to try and do because it's so naive. You should be, especially defensively, you should be a little bit more conservative in the first 5-10 minutes and make sure that you don't concede an early goal that completely changes the whole landscape of the game from that moment on. And that's exactly what's happened in the last two games. You know, Arsenal had to go for it against United because they're 2 goals down after 10 minutes thanks to defensive mistakes. And the same against Southampton. Southampton knew that they could sit deep and soak up the fresh air because they had a 1-goal lead after 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Very, very disappointing. I am a bit worried about Koscielny, and I do think probably this summer is the time to look towards a long-term replacement for him. He is getting older, and it's starting to show. Let's move on to a slightly more positive outcome from Sunday's game. Olivier Giroud scored his 17th substitute goal for Arsenal, which is as many as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, which is the most that any substitute has ever scored for one club in the Premier League. Hmm. Only Jermaine Defoe has scored more substitute goals, but he's done it for more than one club. I guess, firstly, we should congratulate him on a brilliant finish. Very, very clever, deft little header from Alexis Sanchez cross. I guess that's what he brings an Arsenal team. He's so good in the air, isn't he?
Yeah, you don't see many strikers like that just specialize in scoring with their head. He's one of the last ones, I think, that does it so well. And his presence was just, I've always remarked, even whenever he doesn't score, that his presence in the box is so useful because defenders have to stick to him because he's so good at creating space, not just for himself, but for teammates. And when you have him on, it's just kind of like having a bull in a china shop in the box. He commands so much attention and can do so much damage that I still will always question why he doesn't get used more.
Yeah, he's an occupier, isn't he? He occupies attention, and by doing that, he creates space for others. Wenger has said that Giroud will start more. We will see if that is the case or not. I think he might do, actually. Arsenal play a lot of games over the next couple of weeks, so there's a high chance that Giroud might get in. And seeing as Lacazette is only allowed to play 65 minutes of football, he can't possibly start every game, can he? Do you think Giroud should start though, even if you believe Lacazette should be given a rest here and there?
Yeah, two things about that. I don't believe anything Arsene Wenger says anymore. I don't mean that I think he's a liar. I just think that he's we kind of talked about this, he's kind of in his wily days where he's going to say what he thinks people want to hear, but he knows what he means. Like, he says Giroud will start more. Well, that could just mean he's going to keep starting in the Europa and the League Cup, just like we expected. That said, I do think he should start more. I've been racking my brain over why Lacazette and Giroud can't be on the same pitch at the same time. For whatever reason, Arsene Wenger just seems drastically opposed to it. Like, it would just, like, shift the balance of the world if he had two French strikers at the front of the formation. Even from the start, you know, he hasn't messed with two strikers in a long time. Even when he has two strikers on the same pitch, one tends to go wide.
Yeah.
But I don't see why he couldn't fit Giroud in there. I mean, you could drop Alexis if he's in bad form and just have two strikers. It makes total sense to me. I know I've seen other people talking about it. I don't know why he's opposed to that. And, you know, to keep rambling about Giroud, because this is a subject I'm very passionate about. Last year, he was our most efficient goal scorer. This year, he's our most efficient goal scorer. And yeah, it's a small sample size, but when a guy is scoring that frequently, wouldn't you want to start him just to find out if he can be that consistent as a starter? Because, you know, we for 4 years or so, whenever he was with us, we never challenged him. We never gave him a striker to really keep him in top form. If he was good or bad, he got sent out there regardless. There was nothing that was going to affect that spot. And that's not really a conducive environment to grow in. And now that he's finally had a challenger these past 2 years, he has not been given a shot to defend his starting place, at least not in the Premier League, which is obviously the end goal. And I don't get why that hasn't happened whenever he's proven he's gotten better since he was our go-to starter for everything. So why haven't we given him that chance to see if he can't maximize on this efficiency that he has? And, you know, chances are, obviously, he's not going to continue scoring a goal every 75 minutes or whatever he's at now. But we don't know until we put him out there. And clearly he's got tons of confidence right now because he's scoring a ton. And it's been going on since last year, like I said. So just throw him out there. Let him. It wouldn't take more than a game or two to see how far we can ride that confidence, that consistency to score. I don't know why we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's now scored 1.4 goals per 90 minutes this year, which is the most in the Premier League. And now, obviously, he has only scored 4 goals.
Yeah.
That number is slightly inflated by sample size.
But you have to throw in...
By small sample size.
Last year, I think he was scoring a goal every 80 minutes, which was second only to Harry Kane.
Yeah. So he has proven that he can score goals at a high rate. I think the reason why Wenger is hesitant to start him, and why I would be hesitant to start him as well, mainly lies on the style of the team. I think last year we saw that while Giroud may have been scoring goals, Arsenal were better with a mobile centre-forward as an all-round attack, whether that was Alexis Sanchez playing through the middle or Danny Welbeck later in the year. They just looked more fluent and they looked more potent with a centre-forward who can run the channels, who can stretch the pitch, who has the ability to drift wide and take on a defender. And Giroud, for all his abilities, will never be that player. And that's not his fault. He's just a very slow striker. But he will never be that mobile centre-forward that Wenger wants, and really I would like as well. I would rather see Welbeck start up front, not because I think he's a better player than Giroud. I think Giroud is the better player, but because I think he's the better fit. Example, isn't it? Is Jimmy Greaves for England in the 1966 World Cup was essentially the best striker in the world, and Sir Ralph Ramsey went with Jeff Hurst instead, not because he's the better player, but because he was the better fit for the team. And I see Welbeck and Giroud in a similar circumstance. Really, I think Giroud is the better player, and I think he's proven that. But I don't think he suits the style of the team. Arsenal don't have natural wingers who are going to whip balls into the box. They have the kind of creative, guily attacking midfielders who are going to thread those balls into the channels. And Giroud isn't really that player. He's a good player, but he's not the right type of player.
See, but I agree that there are more benefits to having that mobile striker, but I still see, you know, Kolasinac, Bellerin, Ozil, even Alexis whipping in crosses when Giroud's not out there, and I don't get it. I mean, if there's nobody on that team in the attack that can field crosses like Giroud can, but they persist in sending in crosses that just fall harmlessly, and I don't know. I mean, we don't have the wingers, but I do think that Kolasinac is very good. He would be very good at setting up Giroud. Bellerin still kind of struggles with his crossing.
Yeah.
But even
he doesn't know where the penalty area is.
No, he doesn't. he has no final instinct whatsoever. But he has had glimpses of some steps with his crosses, with his crossing. I mean, if it's between that and losing a creative attacker, I would rather lose the creative attacker because it hasn't served us that well. I mean, at least in these past two games, having that extra attacker hasn't helped as much as an extra finisher would, because when Giroud's out there, you have this aerial threat, which is essentially what I'm saying is I would rather have that aerial threat than another creative mind to try to get the ball through on the ground, because it opens up a whole new world if you can send in aerial balls along with the ones you're sending in on the ground, because then defenders have two extra things, or two things to look for. And I feel like it heightens our odds of pushing through any defense rather than just constantly passing the ball around the box, knowing we can't just serve the ball in and hope somebody finds it, because the opposing defense is far bigger and far stronger than our attack is.
Yeah, I mean, there were many moments where Arsenal just aimlessly passed the ball around. It would end up at the feet of Kolasinac or Bellerin, and then it would go back to Xhaka, and then it would go to the other one, yep. And then it would come back to Xhaka, and then it would go to the other one, and there was just no precision in and around the box. It was all 40 yards from goal. There was no drive, no purpose to their play. It just seemed like they were keeping the ball's sake, really. And Giroud does provide that as a focal point. If he gets stuck, you can just throw the ball in the box to him, and he may not score, but it will cause problems just by virtue of his presence there. I think really the type of game that he suits works better as later in the game. Especially if Arsenal push in for a goal, whether it be an equaliser or something like they were on Sunday, where opposition defences are more likely to sit deep, that's when space becomes limited, and that's when crosses into the box become more dangerous, because there is the opposition are sat, so they're almost sat in their own box, that they're just inviting crosses into them, and there's little pressure on the ball. Whereas I think earlier in the game, there are more opportunities for Arsenal to pick apart an opposing midfield and defence. I mean, it's a debate that's going to run, and everybody has their own opinion on it. Some people will defend Giroud greatly, and I'm one of them. I do really like him as a player. But others will really don't rate him at all. They see him as a lumbering, slow, lethargic centre forward that sometimes he does look like, but I think that's a bit harsh on him. We will see what Wenger does, whether he does stick by his word and plays him or not. It will be interesting to see. It will be interesting to see him and Lacazette play together, that is for sure. The age old big man, little man would be could pay dividends for the Gunners. Unfortunately, that was pretty much the only positive to come from Sunday's game. So let's return to the dumps. Aaron Ramsey has picked up a hamstring injury, another hamstring injury. We are recording this on Monday. We don't yet know the timescale of that injury. All that's been said at this point is Arsene Wenger in his post-match press conference saying he had a hamstring injury at the end of the game. They're usually a few weeks. which at this stage in the year is really bad timing, because a few weeks actually means 6 or 7 games, not 3 games. So if he's out till you know, January, let's say, he'll miss Liverpool game, he'll miss the Chelsea game, and I think he'll miss another 3 or 4 Premier League games on top of that as well. So really bad timing for a niggling injury. I guess firstly, are you worried that it could run and run throughout the year, as we've seen with so many other Arsenal injuries in the past, and Ramsey as well?
Yeah, I think we talked about on a previous podcast how if Ramsey was going to get hurt, it would be from the crowded list of December fixtures and not having proper rotation. That said, I don't think we expected it would come this early, because I mean, the logic was he gets hurt when he has to play every 2-3 days. He hasn't had to do that yet, and he still got hurt, which...
No, I thought we'd at least get another week out.
That's what I thought. I thought we'd at least get a couple more matches before he inevitably went down, but... I mean, you think back to his big breakout 2013-14, he had an injury there too, and he was still massively effective. So, I mean, hopefully that's just all we can hope for. And obviously there's always that chance that he pulls a Ozil or Lacazette and magically appears in the starting 11 against West Ham, but I don't think you can mask... I mean, seeing him limping around, trying to run for those last few minutes was just like, no, that's the last thing we wanted to see there.
Yeah, and in the past, Ramsey's been criticized for poor form, but he's not been fit because he's been working back from an injury, and people have been so quick to jump on his back because he's not been playing well, but you can see he's not got that max sharpness. And I think some players can be injured and they can come back first game and they look really, really sharp again. I remember Danny Welbeck in that FA Cup game last year just looked razor sharp.
Mesut Ozil too.
Yeah, Ozil as well. Ramsey isn't like that. He takes 5, 6, 7 games if he's missed a couple of months to regain his confidence and to regain that cutting edge. So if he does miss the next month or so, then actually, before we see him at his best again, it could be February... kind of time, which would be somewhat disappointing. I guess let's move on to something that Arsenal can control. Who or how should they deal with this injury? Is it a straight swap, or should there be a little bit more tinkering going on?
It better be a straight swap, and if it's anything except Jack Wilshere, then he needs to leave, because clearly, you know, I don't remember exactly what Arsene Wenger said, but he said something like, oh, Jack Wilshere isn't coming back. He is back. He is ready.
Yeah, he said it after the Europa League game on Thursday.
Yeah, so you got to back that up now. If I have to see Mohamed Elneny or Francis Coquelin...
I could hear the Elneny train worried over. He's getting going.
I don't know. I said it kind of jokingly, but I'm serious. If he doesn't start Wilshere against West Ham, I don't see why Wilshere would stay, because that's just, it, for lack of a better word, it's bullshit. There's no reason why he shouldn't stay. That said, I do have faith that he will start. Literally no reason why he shouldn't. He's the closest thing we have to Ramsey. He's the closest thing we have to a midfield impact player, since Ramsey's been the only one really consistently. And then obviously the only thing you got to worry about is rotation, since we don't have Ramsey throughout, or we assume we won't have Ramsey for these tight fixtures where it's every 3 days. You got to worry. You can't start Wilshere every 3 days, because then you're just asking.
He's going to break his ankle.
Yeah, absolutely. At least one ankle.
Or both of the ankles are going if he plays every game.
So then you got to worry about, well, then we're inevitably going to see Coquelin or Elneny, which I don't know. I mean,
it could be both at once.
Oh, don't even say. Why would you say that?
Yeah, it's not good news for Arsenal. It's not good news at all. I do think Wilshere will play. I'd rather see him play as one of the front three than in centre midfield. But really, it's difficult to drop one of those front three for Wilshere. probably the only one you're going to drop is Sanchez, and you would take away the pace in the team if you brought Wilshere and Ozil on either flank. I think it would really take away an element of Arsenal's attack that needs at least a little bit of pace and directness from one of those two players playing off the central striker. Let's move on to Ramsey's partner, Granit Xhaka. I thought he was not very good on Sunday again. Is it time for him to be replaced? And I guess by replaced, I don't necessarily mean by somebody in the squad now, but a longer term in the transfer market.
I'm going to say nope and nope, because, I mean, I do think that we need to... I mean, it's the conversation we had last time, I think, where we said he doesn't need to be replaced, he needs to be reassessed. We need to find a way to make him work because he's too talented and he has too many capabilities to just drop him and replace him. There were moments against Southampton where he was terrible. I mean, I think, and this is probably isn't going to be a very popular viewpoint, but I think the majority of the match he was very good. It's just the problem with him is the mistakes that he makes. He made like 3, 4, maybe 5 really, really terrible passes against Southampton. And those just look so much worse and they stick in your mind and you kind of lose the other things he did. But he did create the second most chances on the team. He did maintain a good deal of control. He didn't lose possession strictly. It was just those handful of really bad passes. But, I mean, at the same time, those bad passes that he made, at least some of them, not all of them, some of them are inexcusable, but some of them were an attempt to push the ball through the box, which I'm not going to fault him for, because when you're dinking the ball around the box, I do want to see somebody try to create something. And it doesn't always come off. And whenever you're making bad passes in the middle third to your own defenders, then those bad passes going forward look even worse because it's the same guy. But I don't think he was that bad. I don't think he's been that bad this year. I mean, he's still obviously not the guy that we need because he's not the Patrick Vieira that some people thought he was going to be when he first came. But I mean, you think back to the Tottenham game, and him and Ramsey were supposed to be overwhelmed by the Tottenham midfield, and they just weren't. They had such good control and strength, and I think that was... I mean, at this point, it's the anomaly because we've seen that our midfield overrun so many times. But I do think it showed that this partnership can work. And maybe that comes down to having somebody like Mustafi behind them. But no, I don't think Xhaka should be replaced. I don't think we should be looking into long-term replacements. I think we should be looking into long-term solutions to make him better. But that doesn't involve replacing him.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one, because I guess he is a talented player. You can see when he plays, he has moments where he's like, oh, that was a really good tackle, or that's a really nice long range pass, raking ball out to Bellerin or Kolasinac or something. But there are so many moments where he makes the wrong decision, especially without the ball. The number of times where he gives the ball away with one of those passes that you were talking about, where he's trying to force it a little bit, which, again, I don't mind. I'd rather him do that than pass 5 yards square again. So I'd rather him try and push the ball into those advanced areas. He loses it, and then he hares after it. Like, he just runs after the ball and completely vacates the space that he's in. And there's then about 40 yards between the Arsenal back three and him, who was the deepest midfielder, and suddenly you've got the opposition countering against an extremely vulnerable Arsenal midfield, because A, Xhaka gave the ball away, which I don't have that much of a problem with, but B, which is far worse, he then just runs after it, completely not thinking about what he's doing, not thinking about the responsibility that he has as the deepest lying midfielder. So my issues come more with him without the ball. He's too slow. He's extremely unathletic. His turning circle is terrible. He can't release the ball quick enough if an opposition press him. We saw against Everton when Idrissa Gueye pressed him for Wayne Rooney's goal. He's too dependent on his left foot. Contrast him under pressure to Cazorla under pressure, and they're two completely different players. He's so unagile that he can't evade an opponent who's kind of harassing him on his back. I've just had enough of him, really. And I do think he's a good player. It's not that I don't think he's a good player, and there wouldn't be a point in replacing him long term for a £10 million player. You have to go and replace him with a 35. You have to go and replace him with the Nemanja Matic, N'Golo Kante, that level defensive midfielder who is a significant improvement. There's no point in going and buying another Granit Xhaka and replacing him with a decent defensive midfielder. And the thing that I always come back to is the fact that he costs £35 million. He was not cheap. He essentially, when he was signed, he was Arsenal's second most expensive player in history, level with Alexis Sanchez. So for £35 million, I am expecting a dominating midfielder. And now that maybe isn't Xhaka's fault. It's not Xhaka's fault he cost £35 million. But probably quite a lot of blame on Wenger there for scouting and highlighting and acquiring what I would now say is the wrong player for the wrong price. But there's a level of expectation that comes with a £35 million player. For me, Xhaka doesn't reach that level. He's good, but he makes too many mistakes, and he's just useless without the ball. He's marginally better than Mikel Arteta. Without the ball. That's
harsh.
Yeah, it's harsh, but that's what I'm giving him. This will kind of link into our discussion of Xhaka and also dealing with the Rams injury. Have you had enough of the back three? Would you like to see Wenger? I know Wenger was saying that he prefers the back four system. That's the one that he likes. Would you like to see him go back to the back four? Would you like to see the back three continue?
I'd like to see it change based on the opponent. I mean, the one thing I think that Arsene Wenger has always and will always be criticized for is his inability to make a change on the fly depending on the opponent. I don't think he's ever done that very well. I think he just kind of goes with what's working and assumes it'll beat everybody. That said, I would like to see a back four. It's just, you know, going back to that Tottenham match, I think the problem is our midfield, and it has been all year. It had been up until that point because they weren't good enough to help the attack and they weren't strong enough to help the defense. But against Tottenham, when we had Xhaka, Ramsey, and Mustafi right behind them, it was beautiful. It was perfect. And, you know, I almost see that as just as important as our attacking three, is having those three. And I haven't checked this, but I'm pretty sure that's the only time those three have started together for a full match. I'm probably wrong on that. But that said, I think the back four offers up many more capabilities. The problem is I think Wenger is kind of handcuffed to the back three because of the personnel that he has. He's got far more defenders, viable defenders, and he has viable midfielders. And I think it's Monreal for me that kind of gives me pause, because if you switch to the back four, where do you put him? He's not strong enough.
He's not a center off in a back.
No, and you do not drop Kolasinac. I will lose my mind if he drops Kolasinac. But then at the same time, it's unfair to drop Monreal because Monreal has been superb this year. Mm. So I think if you do go with the back four, it just depends on what you do with the midfield and how you put that together. But yeah, what do you think?
I would like to see him return to a back four, and I'm just going to pile the hate on Granit Xhaka, I'm afraid. I'd like to see him return to back four, and I'd like to see him play Francis Coquelin instead of Granit Xhaka and play two passing, distributing midfielders alongside him. Whether that be, I guess you could play Granit Xhaka as one of those players, but whether that be Granit Xhaka and Ramsey, or Wilshere and Ramsey, or Ramsey and Elneny even, there is a lack of athleticism in Arsenal's defending at the moment, and that was made painfully clear when Mertesacker was playing at the heart of the back three. Obviously, Mustafi is quite a quick defender, and he's got a good range to him. So I would like to see a back four return. My only hesitation is the Monreal Kolasinac kind of confusion, really, because you can't play Monreal as a centre half, but you would like to fit both of them in the same team, because they have been some of Arsenal's better players. I think Kolasinac has struggled a little bit more recently in his distribution in the final third. But I feel sorry for him in that mark, because he's being passed the ball, and the moves are so slow that when he gets the ball, there's absolutely no option available for him. So I don't really know what's kind of expected of him. But I don't think he's been as vibrant and as powerful as he was earlier in the year. But he's still been a very solid performer down that left-hand flank. So you would have to drop one of them to play the back four. So maybe you take the Spurs route, the Pochettino route, and you have four very good fullbacks, and you just rotate them in and out. And you ask them to play really hard for 90 minutes, knowing that they're not going to play the next game. That's a possibility. It kind of solves it, but it's not a perfect solution. But so I would like to see it happen, but there are restrictions to its ability to work. And I do worry against the counter-attack, because there are a number of occasions where Arsenal will be three defenders against the opposition's counter-attack, which is fine, but it's just the three centre-halves. And I could absolutely envisage a case where there are two defenders against an opposition counter-attack, because it's just the two centre-halves, because both full-backs have flied forward, as Wenger always asked them to do. The midfielders have been caught out of position and they've just given the ball away. And suddenly, you know, Dusan Tadic and Charlie Austin are running at Lauren Koscielny and Per Mertesacker. It's a little bit frightening.
I do think, though, I mean, because that's something that has occurred to me, too, is with a back three, if one makes a mistake, which apparently is very, very likely to happen, you've got two guys to help recover. With the back two, whoever you throw in there, it gets really dicey. The good thing is, at least when Kolasinac or Bellerin are in there, you've got two fullbacks that can push forward as hard as they want, because they have such good recovery and such good work rates. But if you do that rotation where you have Monreal and Debuchy, they do not have that same...
benefit.
So yeah, I do want to see the back four experimented with, but it's got to be. I mean, I like that he used it in the Europa League. I think he should try it again in the Europa League, because that was really neat to see, especially with Chambers and Holding back there together. I don't think we have a partnership though with the current guys that we have, because Mustafi and Koscielny, they're too similar. Mertesacker and Koscielny, I mean, it worked 5 years ago, but I don't know if you want to trust that to work now, or 4 years ago, however long it was. And you can't drop Koscielny, because he's just shown too much over the years that I don't think he'd ever be dropped. So
I think the only two that would have a chance of working is Koscielny and Mustafi. And even then, it's not a partnership that you're especially confident in working. The key for me would be, if you do switch to a back four, you have to have that security in midfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt whether Wenger would take such a pragmatic route and play a out-and-out anchor man in midfield. Because we've seen it with the back four before, where he just completely surrenders defensive security, throws in four or five technical passing midfielders and just completely negates any sort of focus on being a tight and structured team.
The only midfield configuration that I think with the present crop that we have is I kind of had like a 4-4-2, but with the diamond in the middle. And I know Xhaka being the last midfielder is a terrible idea, but going back to the Tottenham match where Xhaka and Ramsey were able to make it work, I think if you have Xhaka and then flanked by Ramsey and Wilshere, then you're always going to have at least one of those two guys tracking back with you. And they both defend pretty well when they get into position. So that could work, but it's so flimsy that I wouldn't go into that kind of formation with full confidence.
To be honest, at the moment, I don't think there is a team that I would be confident in. Isn't back three or back four. There isn't a lineup that I would think, I'm fully confident that lineup can go and win games away at Manchester United or away at Liverpool or whatever it may be. I think that's probably just the nature of the beast at the moment. Arsenal's squad, I don't think it's that good. Especially the top 10, 11 players, I don't think are that good. I think you've got your Ozils, your Sanchez, your Lacazette. But the very good players in the Manchester City squad, players like Raheem Sterling, Leroy Sané, players like Vincent Kompany, players like, and maybe include David Silva as a world-class player, but there aren't many very good players in the Arsenal squad. I think you've got a couple of world-class players, and then you've got a lot of decent to good players. But there aren't many, and they're kind of just below that top-tier level player. And I think it's showing. I think it's costing them at the moment. We will end our review of the Southampton game there. I guess a sloppy performance would be probably the way to describe it best if you wanted a single word. Any more thoughts or remarks from Sunday's underwhelming draw?
No, I'm just excited that we don't have to wait a full week to try to fix it. We have West Ham, which we will talk about, I'm sure, after the break.
Yes, we shall do. Wonderful segue there.
I've been practicing.
You've been in front of the mirror again. West Ham in the week. As Josh alluded to, we will preview West Ham game. It's on Wednesday night. We'll preview that after the break. So we will see you in just a moment. Somewhat disappointing review of Sunday's draw to Southampton. I thought there were some interesting topics there, especially with the festive period coming up. It will be interesting to see how Wenger moves his team forward. Speaking of, Arsenal travel to the London Stadium on Wednesday night to face West Ham, who in their last two games have narrowly lost to Man City, thanks to a screamer from Raheem Sterling in the last minute. And they beat Chelsea on Saturday. So in true Arsenal fashion, they are facing an opponent that is just reaching form. We didn't talk about this actually last time. Fraser Forster played like Stretch Armstrong again.
How could we forget?
That save from Ramsey was unbelievable.
Yeah.
West Ham, or David Moyes, should I say, more specifically, has dropped Joe Hart, and he's playing Adrian, who was incredible against Chelsea and inevitably will be excellent against Arsenal on Wednesday. So I guess we won't necessarily take too long on this game. We'll delve into it a little bit. Are you worried ahead of what suddenly looks more like a tricky away fixture than a couple of weeks ago?
I am worried, which is probably going to be shocking coming from somebody that always predicts 4 or 5 nil wins. I just, you know, like you said, all year they've been horrible, and then all of a sudden here comes David Moyes and they can hang with Chelsea and Manchester City, which obviously means they're going to hang with us, and it's not going to be easy. And it's going to be tough, especially with what I think is our best player in Aaron Ramsey out. I assume he's out. Again, I keep assuming this. There could be a magic healing.
Hamstring injuries are very rarely recoverable in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I have my score prediction is 2-1, which is very modest. I mean, that's 2-1 to the Arsenal, which is very modest for me.
Steady on. You'll be predicting losses soon, if you're not careful.
I really don't think I ever have predicted a loss, which I probably should. I shouldn't say that out loud, but
yeah, Arsenal 4-0 to beat Barcelona.
maybe my worry is a good thing, because maybe this optimism that we're so much better than we really are just needs to be done away with, and maybe if I can start looking at it practically, we'll start doing better. That would be nice.
Yes. I mean, as every fan knows, they have a complete and utter control over how well the team plays. based on their superstitious rituals. That
it's science, yeah. It's science.
Yeah, I mean, it's just obvious, isn't it? I have a pair of lucky socks that aren't very lucky at the moment. I am worried. I kind of wonder if the Chelsea win for West Ham may actually play into Arsenal's hand a little bit. Just by virtue of it means that they won't be complacent against a team that really are pretty poor, or have been pretty poor for most of the year. If Chelsea won 2-0 in a fairly routine victory, but West Ham had shown something, you could see Arsenal kind of looking past them. They've done that in the past. I suspect they'll do that again in the future. So in a way, the win against Chelsea could be a good thing for the Gunners. We will have to see. Would you make any changes? Obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about the fixture congestion coming up in a few weeks. It's no different for Arsenal than it is for any other team, so there's no point in complaining about it. But would you make kind of any elements of rotation to the team to provide rest to a few players?
I mean, I've learned a long time ago that what I would do and what Arsene Wenger would do are completely different. So skipping over my dreams of starting Giroud and sitting Alexis, I'm going to say that I don't think we should make changes. Because the one change I would be worried about is getting Ramsey rest, but he's taking care of that. I guess maybe Koscielny. But again, this is kind of where I differ from Wenger, in that I don't think he will sit Koscielny, but I think it's necessary. That said, I haven't seen if there's an update on Mustafi, if he'll be ready. If he's not ready, well, then there's nothing we can do, because he's not going to start Holding and Chambers
I mean, would you start Mertesacker again, assuming Mustafi is not fit?
See, I really have changed my tune with Mertesacker lately, where I do think he is a very mentally strong person, and if anyone's going to come back from a mistake like that, I would have faith that Mertesacker would. That said, West Ham, the thing with West Ham, I've always thought that they had the talent to compete, and now they're finally putting that together. The thing with their talent is, it's, you know, I don't worry about Andy Carroll too much. I shouldn't say this, because he's gonna do a Charlie Austin. But guys, you know, Mertesacker doesn't have the athleticism, as everybody knows full and well. And I do think the West Ham attack does with their attacking options. So, again, that's a roundabout way of saying I would start Mertesacker, but I'm not happy that I have to.
Yeah, I mean, Carroll didn't play against Chelsea, or he didn't start at least. He may have come off the bench.
They're saving him.
Yeah, saving him to bully Arsenal into submission like every single time he played. I still remember watching that West Ham game when he scored. I was in London at the time, in a pub with probably 80% West Ham fans. It was an absolute nightmare.
I still don't think it actually happened. I don't think it really happened that he scored a hat trick against us.
I know, it was just so depressing. but yeah, he Moyes played Mikel Antonio up front. He played Arnautovic and he played Lanzini either side of him, which is a pacey trio. Mm-hmm. Up against a back three on the counter attack, they could cause Arsenal problems. They caused Chelsea problems, and they have the ability to cause Arsenal problems as well. So this definitely isn't a game to be taken for granted, and it also isn't a game where Mertesacker would be comfortable. It's not like he's much better when he goes up against a traditional number nine, you know, like Diego Costa in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Where all he has to do is stick on his back, mark him, and enter into a physical battle, because he's not going to get moved around by kind of sly, sneaky movement and interchangeable runs from midfield. But if West Ham play with Antonio as a striker, well, he's more of a midfielder than a striker. That could cause Mertesacker a few problems, I think.
I will say, watching them play Chelsea, I thought if you put Arsenal into this Chelsea game, it would look identical, because Chelsea were missing chances, and they were just, West Ham sat back, and like you said, they struck on the counter, and that was enough
and Chelsea looked vulnerable defensively as well.
Yeah, they did.
Or maybe I should say West Ham made them look vulnerable. It was a very Arsenal performance from Chelsea, which is nice to see. They Arsenaled it again. Would you... obviously, you don't think Wenger will, but would you drop Alexis Sanchez if it were your decision?
Yes, and this goes beyond me just thinking he needs a good sit-down. I think, you know, we've had seasons in the past where he's incredibly athletic. We all know this, but everybody needs a break. And if you're going to... If you need to reset him anyway, I picture this like resetting my old Nintendo 64. You just hit the reset and everything's better again. It's not that easy. But I do think if you need to, and I think you do, we need to sort of start over with Alexis and get him to recenter himself, because it's like he's drilling himself into the ground like some rogue jackhammer. It's like it's frustrating to watch, and I think the best solution to that is just give him a rest, give him some time. Even if he pouts on the bench, I don't care. Just give him some time to think about it. And especially in this Christmas period where we're really going to need him, I think I would take him out of the lineup for this one.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you've made there, because a lot of the discussions I've seen on Twitter and in the media have centred on his play. And have said Alexis Sanchez should be dropped because he's not playing well enough. And that argument I disagree with quite strongly, because he may not be playing well enough, but he's probably Arsenal's only player who can score from nothing. And against Southampton, he created more chances than anybody else. He created the one piece of quality for the goal in a good cross to Giroud. And he does have that ability to play poorly and yet have two moments of brilliance and score or create two goals. And I don't think there's anyone else in the Arsenal squad that can do that, really. But an argument based on his psyche, on his mentality, I think probably has a bit more credence. Definitely, he doesn't quite look the same vigorous, kind of hounding, nasty, annoying player to play against that he has done in previous years. He looks a bit disinterested. He's a little bit unmoved. He almost looks a bit bored at times.
Yeah.
Which perhaps dropping him would kind of provide him with a little bit of a spark, a little bit of a kind of stick to poke him with. Maybe I like him when he's a bit angry. you know, he has that South American flair, that real grit to him. And I think he plays at his best when he's on the edge, when he's a little bit kind of vented up. He's a little bit annoyed, and he just doesn't seem to be like that this season. He is still producing, he's still creating chances, he's still scoring goals, but he's not quite playing at the same level as he has done in previous seasons. Is there anything else that you want to touch on this game before we give our wholly ambitious score predictions?
I'm serious when I say there is literally no reason why Jack Wilshere doesn't start here.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, then we've been asking questions already, but if he doesn't start,
I'm telling you, Mohamed El Neny is on his way. He's coming. I agree with you completely. I think Wilshere should have started a Premier League game before now. He should have. I don't think it's a terrible decision that he hasn't, because really, it's only been one Premier League game a week for most of the year, and it's difficult to squeeze him into that 3-4-3. But now, assuming Ramsey's out, which I think is a fair assumption to make, I would like to see Wiltshire play, and I think he will play. I hope he will play. No, he's not going to play. Wenger never does anything I want.
No, of course not.
No, he's definitely not playing. It's going to be Mohamed Elneny and Francis Coquelin midfield too, with Theo Walcott right wing.
Of course.
What is your score prediction? You said 2-1, right?
2-1.
And
yeah,
do you think Lacazette gets himself on the score sheet? He's been not very good away from home.
Yeah, goals, at least. Yeah, I thought he was really, really well, or really, really good against Southampton. I thought he had a very understated performance. I would bang for him to get back on. I would love to see him get two. Wouldn't that be nice? I forget who he scored two against, but it was just like the greatest feeling
Brighton,
in the world.
Brighton, I think it was.
Brighton, yeah. It was just the greatest thing, and I want to see that again.
Yeah, I mean, he scored 8 goals now, hasn't he? So he is scoring a deceptive high amount of goals. I think, you know, in the kind of national media is focusing on the kind of Morata, Lukaku, your Agueros, your Harry Kane's, and Alexander Lacazette's kind of ticking along quite nicely. He's not having the braces and the hat tricks that kind of garner the headlines, but I think he's going along at a steady pace. I think Arsenal will win as well. Like I said earlier, I don't think they'll be complacent, which is huge for this Arsenal team. When they play anywhere close to their best, they usually beat teams. And while it's an away fixture, it's still in London. I think that makes a difference. Midweek, you don't want to be travelling long distances, and Arsenal aren't travelling long distances. So I think they'll win. I think it will be quite comfortable. I'll be optimistic. I'll say 3-0.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they'll go in the break 1-0, and then it will be quite a boring second half, and maybe Welbeck nicks one late on or something like that.
That's bold.
Yeah, very bold. Let's discuss the Europa League draw, where Arsenal will play FK Östersunds. And they're actually, and this is really quite remarkable, they're actually managed by an Englishman.
I did not know that.
They're managed by former Southampton defender Graham Potter, for those who like a nice throwback there. I'm completely reading this off BBC Sport. They have risen from the fourth division to the top flight in 6 years, which is very impressive. And yeah, here we are. The club was formed. The club was formed in October 1996, the same month.
You just saw it too.
Wenger became Arsenal manager. That is remarkable. That's incredible. So this year we've had a player play who was born after Wenger became manager in Eddie Nketiah, and now we're playing a club who were formed at the same time as Arsene Wenger was made manager.
It's remarkable.
Dear me, he's been here a long. He's an old man. He's been here a long time. I'm not going to pretend I know loads about FK Östersunds. They're Swedish, and that's about all I know, to be honest. In theory, it's a nice draw. Arsenal, you know, they could have had a tricky tie. There were some good teams in that pot too. Napoli and Borussia Dortmund both coming down from the Champions League. You had Celtic, which obviously is a local derby in European terms, so that wouldn't have been a particularly nice game. Lyon, Marseille. So there were some teams there to be wary of, I think that's fair to say. So it's a decent draw for Arsenal. And, somewhat comically, Spurs, after topping the group with the most points in the whole competition, which, you know, let's give them their due, with Dortmund and Real Madrid in the same group, that's pretty impressive, have now been drawn against Juventus. Which is pretty much the toughest draw they could have got, because they couldn't have drawn Real Madrid, you can't draw an English team, so they couldn't have drawn Chelsea. So really, it was between Juve and Bayern Munich for the toughest draw that they could have got. So not an especially nice draw for Spurs. That will be fun to watch.
It would have been wonderfully poetic, though, if they would have drawn Bayern.
Got fumbled 5-1 in both legs. Yeah.
But maybe Juventus can be their Bayern. Yeah, maybe they can draw them every year.
I'm just glad that Bayern Munich aren't in the Europa League, because it would only have ended one way, wouldn't it? Go ahead.
I was going to say the thing about the Europa League draw. I don't know anything about Östersund either. I'm not going to pretend like I do. But you can say it was a good draw just because you see Dortmund drew Atalanta, Napoli drew Leipzig, Lyon drew Villarreal. I mean, these are quality teams being drawn against each other, and not wanting to sell Östersund short. I don't know much about them. I just know that they're in the Swedish league and they're fifth in the league. I would have to say that we're going to lose some of the better teams that drop down from the Champions League in this round without having to play them, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if the two I'm really scared of are Napoli and Leipzig. Dortmund are probably the best team in the competition, but Napoli and Leipzig can score goals.
And plus Dortmund's doing terribly right now in Germany. So yeah, dropped to eighth now.
Yeah, they've replaced their manager, haven't they, as well?
Yes, they have.
So, Napoli especially really scared me. They gave Man City a good go in the Champions League. So the fact that them and RB Leipzig have been drawn against each other is only a good thing for Arsenal. So hopefully we can pull up Manchester United and have a nice, easy run through to the final, which would be nice. Other draws of note in the Champions League... Chelsea-Barcelona is a cracking tie.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. Hopefully they get absolutely pummeled. And then Madrid-PSG is an absolute corker. I cannot wait to watch that game. That's going to be absolutely outstanding.
I'm just bummed it's coming so early.
It would have been nice to have a kind of a quarter-final... It would have been nice to have a quarterfinal lineup of, Barca, Real, Bayern, PSG, and Juve, and then three English clubs or something would have been really interesting. But I think that would be a great game because PSG are exciting to watch. Just imagine if we'd have signed Kylian Mbappe.
No, it was never going to happen. Yeah. I don't care what they say. I don't care if Arsene Wenger had dinner with them every night. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, he nearly signed Lionel Messi. He nearly signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, he nearly signed the entire known world. It's amazing how well he scouts everybody.
Yeah, I think he nearly signed me one point, and I'm not very good. Right, we will stop our laughing at Spurs getting drawn at Juve there. We'll take one last interlude before we come back to answer a couple of Twitter questions, which are quite interesting, and then we'll wrap up episode 6 of Pain in the Arsenal, which is exciting, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. 6, it's the start of something.
Yeah, 6.
Yeah, that's all I've got.
6 are the best, apparently. That's what I'm going to ambitiously say. So we will see you. We'll see you after a short interlude. So we have laughed at Spurs, we have laughed at ourselves, and now it's trying to laugh at some repeated questions. We got a question on Twitter from @TacticsFC, I think it was, asking us about the recent hires of Sven Mislintat, the dude from Barcelona. I still can't pronounce his name. Sanlehi?
I think it's Sanye.
In Spanish, Sanye.
Yes.
Expertly pronounced right there. I guess potential hires added to that. Obviously, Per Mertesacker at the end of the season will take over the academy once he's retired. Hopefully, he won't develop players that all play like giraffes. we'll have to wait and see on that one. So we have kind of touched on this question in past episodes, but we'll rehash what we've said previously and maybe add something new. Josh, let me ask you quite a direct question. When do you think Arsene Wenger will leave? Because these seem to be hinting at that time coming fairly imminently.
I still think it depends on what happens this year, but assuming that we don't make a ridiculous run to the Premier League title, I think that he leaves 2019, and I think these two people are here to sort of give Arsene Wenger that one last hurrah next year, where he's got all these resources at his disposal to make the team he really wants, that he really believes can do what he's been trying to do for the past decade.
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. My issue is I think he genuinely believes in this current team.
which is why they're here. He's part of the problem.
Yeah, which is why they're toiling in fifth position. Well, is it 18 points to City? 15 points to City?
I try not to keep track anymore.
It's far too many points to City, yeah. Put it that way. Who, by the way, have equaled Arsenal's winning record of 14 wins in a season in succession, so they will probably break that in midweek. I don't know who they've got, but I don't think it matters. do you know who they've got?
They have Swansea at Swansea.
Oh, difficult game. Wilfred Boney revenge game.
Exactly. Ooh, and then they have Tottenham at the weekend. Ooh.
Oh, that'll be a good game. That'll be a good game. Spurs will get spanked.
Absolutely, but that's always fun.
I think I would be surprised if Wenger signs a new contract. His current one ends out in 2019. It was a 2-year contract that he signed. I don't think he'll leave at the end of this season unless if he wins the league title, which is obviously not going to happen. I think he's going to hang on until he wins that league title, or at least try to hang on. But I think Arsenal are beginning to make hay with the future post Wenger, and I think they see that future beginning in 2019.
The second part of this question is what I think we haven't talked about as much, is when do you think we can see the impact of these two new guys? He said any impact this January, or is that too soon? What do you think about that?
I mean, definitely January is too soon. I'd be very surprised if Arsenal sign anybody of note in January, unless if it's as a replacement for Alexis Sanchez, who they sell.
Well, I don't think Senyehi's even arriving until February.
No, I saw that as well. To be honest, even the summer, I think, would be early to see an impact. Really, I don't think they'll have an impact for at least a year. And even, you know, let's assume they make some signings let's say they make a couple of signings in the summer. It wouldn't be fair to judge those signings until 2 or 3 years later. So really, to properly assess their abilities and the impact that they've had on this club and the recruitment of this club, I don't think it's fair to judge that it really in the next 2 or 3 years at least.
Unless we go this summer and we sign like half of PSG's team, then I think we can say that they had an impact.
Yes, we can say they have an impact, but even then, you don't necessarily know that they're going to be good signings. There have been plenty of flops in the Premier League. Just because Manchester United signed Angel Di Maria doesn't mean that he was a good signing necessarily. So,
yeah,
I think even then you have to see him play. I guess that's my point. And I think Mislintat especially at Dortmund, a lot of their recruitment was based on younger players. Or players in the kind of 19 through 22 range, Ousmane Dembele being probably the most famous one of the last few seasons. And again, especially with those players, you can't judge them their abilities fairly until they're 2 or 3 years into their kind of new term at the new club. But I do think they will have an impact. I do think Arsenal are in a position to be major players in the transfer market in the coming years. I do worry that they'll be priced out of players, especially with the explosion last summer in, just players who's going for silly fees. Mm-hmm. It feels like it might be difficult to be able to sign a half decent player for less than 50 million quid nowadays. So maybe Arsenal will get priced out of a few options, but I do think they will have an impact. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with what you say, that it takes a while for an impact to really be seen for a signing. That said, I do think that we could see an impact from them this summer, just in maybe in the quantity of signings.
That's true.
We usually go a summer, we'll see maybe one big signing with a couple, that could be good signings. If we go into this coming summer and we sign three big-name guys, I would say it's safe to say they've had their impact.
Yeah, I think one way maybe to measure the impact will be the amount of money that is spent.
Yeah.
Arsenal made a profit last summer, which I still find ridiculous.
I try to forget that.
Yeah, so they actually made a profit in transfer fees last summer. So if they go and make a profit again in the next summer, then I think it'd be fair to say that they've not had an impact. But if they go and spend 100, 150 million, even 200 million on three or four players who each cost 40, 50, 60 million, then maybe you could say, right, they're beginning to kind of flex their power and bring in a fresh attitude towards Arsenal's work in the transfer market, which is needed. I think that's difficult to argue otherwise. One final question coming from Facebook this time. Of the Europa League players, and I'm going to exclude the more senior ones, players like Olivier Giroud and Trent Wilshere, who would you like to see in the Premier League over the next kind of month to 2 months, based on rotation? And also, if particular injuries come at what positions, what Europa League players would you trust the most in the coming months of the season?
Of all of them, I think Callum Chambers is the one that I want to see most, just because I do think we need to address our defensive problems, especially if these mistakes continue, which it's looking like, unfortunately, they're becoming a regular thing. Mm. I trust him more than Holding, not by much. It's not like some gap. I would love to see either one of them, but I trust him more than Holding, just because Holding his form has fluctuated a lot, whereas Chambers, we really haven't seen a long run of him at Arsenal. I mean, the last time he was making appearances, he started against Liverpool at the start of last summer, and then, or at the start of last season, and then he was loaned out, and we kind of just forgot about him while he did very well at Borough after that. I'd like to see Callum Chambers. I'd like to see, I almost said I'd like to see Theo Walcott. I wouldn't like to see Theo Walcott, but I wouldn't mind maybe getting him on late in a game and seeing if there's anything there. Because he did look good in the Europa League, which I know isn't saying much because the opposition wasn't that great, but you can only make the most of what you're given, and he did prove a bit, I'll say that. So I would like to see him.
Would you like to see Walcott ahead of a Danny Welbeck or an Alex Iwobi?
No, but kind of like my gap between Chambers and Holding, it's not as big of a gap as I would have thought. The only reason I say that is I think we really need to explore options right now in some sort of search for consistency, or because when we go to the same people the same time of every match, eventually you can start preparing for that. And I think throwing on a Walcott every so often maybe catches opponents off guard. Maybe it gives us a different element that we maybe wouldn't have had before.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even been on the bench in the last couple of Premier League games. So,
yeah,
I don't think I necessarily agree with that decision. He is a a wildly different option to almost any player in the world, just by the fact that he's blisteringly quick. But Wenger doesn't necessarily see him as that squad player. I definitely think Danny Welbeck's overtaken him. And Welbeck obviously has the versatility of being able to play through the middle, something that I don't think Walcott has. And then Alex Iwobi, I think, is probably ahead of him in the pecking order as well. But I think for me, I'd like to see Coquelin, just because he can't pass a ball, but I guess to an extent. I don't really want him to pass the ball. I just want him to run around and tackle and kind of get in the way. And he's actually pretty good at it. And I actually thought he played really, really well on Thursday night. Even with the ball, I actually thought his passing was relatively decent, which it isn't saying much, but better than it usually is. But he again, a little bit like Walcott, he's just different to everything that Arsenal have in the team. He's a completely different midfielder to any other player in the squad. So I wouldn't mind seeing him. And obviously he has Premier League experience, so you're not throwing in a 19-year-old, 20-year-old who has no understanding of what Premier League football is like. You are throwing in a player who's played many, many games in the Premier League. I agree with Callum Chambers. It'd be nice to see Callum Chambers play. I don't think I trust him in a back four playing at centre-half, however.
I agree with that.
I would trust him as the right-sided centre-half in a back three, because obviously he has, he's played at right-back before and has that ability to come into the wide channel if needed. But in a pair of centre-halves, I'm not sure I would trust him. He has an error in him every now and then that in a back three you might be able to get away with, but not necessarily in just a pair of centre halves. I do think the Arsenal squad is relatively deep. I think they have a lot of decent players. That Europa League team is nothing special, but there's a lot of solid performers, I guess, would be the way I would describe them. You know, Elneny, Debuchy, Chambers and Holding, Walcott and Giroud and Iwobi and what have you. They're just solid. They're some are better than others, but they're not. I don't think any are especially brilliant, but they're good players. And to have them available for one or two games in the Premier League season, I don't think is an issue at all. It's when they start playing 10, 15 games that it's a bit different.
I do think it'd be worth exploring Debuchy too. The problem with, because he's been remarkably good. I think the problem with that is I don't think he's equipped to be a wing back.
I think Wenger playing Chambers at wing back and Debuchy at right side is centre off. I think his legs have gone. Debuchy's, that is, and I think Wenger knew it, and that was proof of that. But he has been good. He has been good.
I do think if we go to a back four that he could challenge Bellerin for the fullback spot.
Mm.
Somebody needs to, because Bellerin really needs some sort of impetus to shape up.
I think there are my concern at the wing back position is depth. I think if either Kolasinac or Bellerin get injured, you could shift Monreal to left wing back, but really that's about it. I wouldn't trust either Nelson or Maitland-Niles playing there for any length of period, and there isn't really anyone else who has the ability to play in those positions. So I wonder if that's an area of the squad. I know Wenger has brought in squad players in January before. Obviously, Elneny, he brought in Monreal. So I wonder if he will sign a kind of £5 to £10 million solid wing back. That could be an avenue that he chooses to explore. Before we wrap up, is there anything else Arsenal-related or non-Arsenal-related even that you would like to ask or rant or moan about or praise, even being a positive American?
I've already gotten in my rant on Giroud and Xhaka. Those are my regular ranting subjects. So I'm good on my ranting end. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good on my ranting end, which is a surprise because for a moaning Brit, I usually have lots to lots to get off my chest. So we will wrap up the sixth episode of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast there. You can find us on Twitter at Josh Sippy, which is SIPPIE. You can find me, @_Dowdeswell, DOWDESWELL. You can find us at our website, paininthearsenal.com. And you can find us on Twitter as well. Just Google Pain, or just search Pain in the Arsenal. You'll find us there. Thank you for listening. We will see you after the West Ham game. We've got a bonus podcast this week where we'll review Arsenal's inevitable dismantling of West Ham. And we will preview Saturday's game against Newcastle as well. See you later. Goodbye.